Ladies and gentlemen,
you want experience during your football season? Well, buckle up, sweet cheeks.
That's all we need.
We've got all the experience in the world. This is I Want Your Flex with Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon. Mike and Dan break down everything you need to set your lineups. From position rankings to starts and sits, the guys help you make those hard decisions. And now, let's get your flex on. Here's Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon.
That's it for week 7 in the National Football League. And what a difference a week makes. Bills and Titans were going up and down the field in week 6. The Saints and Seahawks really weren't doing that in week 7, Mike. But New Orleans leaves Seattle with a 13-10 victory. Alvin Kamara, the heavy workload. One big play from DK Metcalf. And a whole lot of junk in between. That's what we got in week 7 in Seattle.
Well, the fact that Metcalf wasn't targeted again, and that became the big talking point for, what, 2.5 quarters? Hell yeah, that big touchdown. Where's he been? Oh, he's fighting with all the defensive backs. Let's take another video shot of these guys jawing after another play. No, just abysmal. I think Tom Brady, I kind of paraphrase it, is, you know, when Kamara scored on the receiving touchdown, it's like, you kind of got to key that guy, don't you? Because he had 8-109 and a score at that point. Because who else was a discernible target, Dan? And you watched it happen. All check, check, check. I thought I was watching Rounders. Malkovich was hanging out with his little Oreo cookies and getting all mad at Matt Damon, playing poker, going, check, 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 because that's really all you did. Because you don't have a wide receiver who's a threat. So The fact that you had Kamara with such space as a receiver was confusing. And then on the run game, he was barely falling forward. And then when they needed on a 3rd and 10, all of a sudden he picks up 12 yards. Like, that's the guy. That's the only guy. But yeah, rain soaked and the under came in pretty easy.
It was ugly. And the point about DK Metcalf, it worked. So you're wondering, why wouldn't you just chuck one up? Even if you're throwing in the double coverage.
Well, yeah, 3rd and long.
Yeah.
Throw the ball up. You're not converting exactly on 3rd down. If it's a punt, it's a punt.
Exactly. It was that was disappointing. I think people who played Alex Collins were disappointed just because of the use of Rashad Penny. What I'm curious about is, was that a showcase game for the Seahawks to try to be like, look, you can have Rashad Penny for the rest of the season if you want, or is Penny going to be in the mix once Chris Carson's healthy, if he's healthy? But Alex Collins, I felt bad for players who may have had Alex Collins in that contest because he just did not come to fruition and really do anything because Penny got a lot more action. But that's not my takeaway. My one takeaway is this from the game, and that's that I think the Saints are going to get crushed by the Buccaneers in week 8.
The
problem is all of that Alvin Kamara stuff can work against the Seahawks. It's not going to work to the point that it did against Tampa, and there's no way that they can score with Tampa. And the real question, maybe, Mike, from the game on Monday night is, how close is Jameis Winston to Geno Smith? Because Jameis looked more like Geno than Jameis looked like Drew Brees. And I think that would be concerning to me if I'm a Saints fan in moving forward. And fantasy-wise, Alvin Kamara is your only play. Even if Michael Thomas comes back this season from his ankle injury, I don't know if I would have any confidence playing him in this Saints offense.
No, and that's the curiosity, though, is you've got Kamara and you've got nothing. Mm-hmm. Right, you get, Tre'Quan Smith was as effective drawing offensive pass interference penalties as he was catching the ball. He had one of each. Right, couple of drops.
Yep.
You got Callaway, who was your preseason darling. He's just a guy. And when you look and break it down, it's Kamara and nothing. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Kevin White got targets for crying out loud. Good for him that he's still in the league. You know,
they're
I speak
great.
That as a Chicago guy. But it's just the idea that, you know, that's where they're at on their depth chart. And whether it's Michael Thomas and I don't know how much he hates the organization and versus how much he's still injured, you know, the reports have been fewer and far between with that. But you got the trade deadline coming up. Go back to the Bears. Go get Allen Robinson out of purgatory or hell, sure. Whichever you know you want to go to. He hasn't signed a long-term deal. He's not getting the ball. Another two catch, 16-yard day, as we'll talk about him once again in a little bit as we review Week 7. But it's just a go find him somebody else, because I'd love to see if there were an actual receiver downfield, whether he'd be any better. Because I have no idea. Like, I have no idea what he is through 7 weeks at this point. Wildly inconsistent results, and really the only guy is the check down in old number 41.
Yeah, and what was so surprising was on their last offensive possession where they got the go-ahead field goal, they had a screen set up, and Jameis seemed to be, you know, afraid of something or cautious of something and just ended up taking the sack when you had your tight end that was set up for a screen that would have gotten you in the end zone. End of the story, Saints end up winning the game anyway. But that was my big takeaway, is Saints going to win on Monday night. I don't think they're going to be as lucky on Sunday against Tampa Bay.
No, I would agree. And going back to your Seattle backfield just real quick, you know, Collins 16 for 35. Like you said, Penny 6 for 9. Do you trust any of these guys to stay healthy? Right, we're past Biageddon or whatever other name people gave week seven, mm-hmm. right? Because there were six teams. We're not going to do that again. We've only got two teams on bye for week eight in the Raiders and the Ravens after they got absolutely worked from pillar to post by Joe Burrow and company. So Alex Collins probably isn't going anywhere near your starting lineup again, nor would Carson or Penny at this point.
No.
Right. Yes, you roster them because they have some share. So they, you know, you play defense on the opportunity that, you know, they don't end up in a lineup against you. But they're just going to rot on your bench at this point.
The one thing that I think that maybe we could say for guys who are in position, if your team is working and maybe you're sitting there, what, we're in week seven, maybe you're 3-4, Mike. Metcalf and Lockett should have value. Once Russell Wilson comes back, it's just, can you navigate week eight and week nine when they're on bye and then feel good about it in week 10? That would be something. So those prices on those guys may be a little bit low as well, that you could go and get something if you wanted to plan for the future, but just don't expect anything next week against Jacksonville. Then you have the bye in week nine.
Yeah, if people in your league will actually trade, mm-hmm. here's your sky is falling. Just make sure they don't get to see any of the video. Because I said we have the two halves of the perfect quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger, who's hurt and will tell you how hurt he is and then still show up and play. Russell Wilson, who wants it on video. Look at me working out. Look at me. So we got both of them. So, yeah, hopefully he's back sooner rather than later. Because Pete Carroll, who's always been the youthful 70-year-old, he's starting to age.
Yeah.
Starting to catch up with him here, these long, long weeks without him.
He's not the only one who's aging. Miles Sanders owners are aging well, and I would be one of them. As we transition to our quick report card from a week ago, I gave you a reason to start Miles Sanders, and that was because the Eagles fans were mocking head coach Nick Sirianni. I know Sanders left in the first quarter with an ankle injury, Mike, and as much as I'd want to take the L, I'm actually not going to blame myself, because you can't foresee injuries.
No.
He had 30 yards when he went down. Yep. He got injured on a reception that went for negative three as he hurt his ankle on that play. But I actually think that you saw their Miles Sanders usage was in the plans. But like everything that is with Miles Sanders, something goes wrong. And of course it did in Vegas. And so Miles Sanders did not work out in the overall picture of one reason to start. You and I disagree on DeAndre Hopkins. And DeAndre Hopkins, what do you know? The reason I didn't want to play him and said he should bench him is because he's TD dependent. And what do you know? He scored a touchdown against his former team, like you said he would. 7 catches, 53 yards, and a score. So I missed on that. My 3-point conversion, Cordarrelle Patterson, did get in the end zone with a rush, did not get in on a reception. Jonathan Taylor had 107 yards and a score against the Niners, so I like that one. And points of Palooza, I put Eagles and Raiders, 55 points in that game, but it just ended up being 4th best in the NFL in week 7, with the Patriots almost topping them by themselves with the 54 they had against the Jets.
The score that, while you knew the outcome was the Jets were going to lose, and maybe you predicted them to lose handily, raise your hand if you did. I've got mine up. 54? Are you kidding me?
I know.
I kept watching. Like, I was out at a soccer match for my daughter, right? So I've got, you know, some video coming through and paying attention. And it's like, we got another scoring update. New England's put another set. Like, what the hell's going on? It's like, I thought this guy was a defensive wizard. And he's got Mac Jones and Brandon Bolden, all these guys running nuts. No, so that was pretty crazy. We talked about the over-unders, and you mentioned it, just the number of games where you did have veritable points of paloozas when there were only two games on the slate that had over-unders of 50-plus. And both of those games came in under.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, when you look at the Rams and the Lions, which, look, the Rams got all they wanted and then some, but Matthew Stafford still delivered. And then Kansas City and Tennessee, Patrick Mahomes cleared, so he should be good to go. But obviously a lot of hand-wringing going on because everybody was quick to get their memes up of Derrick Henry having one more touchdown pass than he did in the first half on Sunday. To that end, three-point conversion was talking about those point spreads, so, you know, maximizing your opportunities given the buys and the fact that Vegas was telling you a lot of low-scoring games were in the offing. Had some love with Tua. He got me my four touchdowns, like I said, saved me in my guillotine league. And then Aaron Rodgers has ownership now of the Washington Football Club, just like everybody else, against that porous, pathetic defense at this point, 274-3. Big challenge to come. We'll get into the Thursday night football game for Week 8 in short orders here. Otherwise, couple of wins, you know, Tua was really the big one for me that I'd highlight. Losses were all over the place, right? Calvin Ridley scored a touchdown, but he was 29th amongst wide receivers in that win over Miami. Allen Robinson, I mentioned him, thinking that you'd get some garbage time. Both he and Justin Fields were guys we talked about a little bit last week. Fields, 184 yards, three picks, the two lost fumbles, 38 rushing yards. He was 31st. Dan, there were only 26 starting quarterbacks in the National Football League in Week 7.
Hey, you know what? I'm not going to take this slander of yourself, okay? Because this is when I look at what Mike Harmon gave you in our last podcast. He is sitting there with his glass half full. All I know is this: is you told us to play Derek Carr. Derek Carr only had three incompletions in destroying the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday. We both liked A.J. Brown, 8 catches, buck 33, and a score. We expanded our wide receiver rankings where you had Deebo Samuel, who scored in a monsoon on Sunday night. You hit Jamar Chase as a great play. I am going to give you your – and Cooper Kupp was your top-ranked wide receiver. And what do you know? Cooper Kupp keeps continuing doing what Cooper Kupp does. So you can talk about your losses. I am going to hype up your wins. And there were many more wins that I didn't even mention.
No, I appreciate it. The running back position was just such a quagmire. Kind of like the field on Sunday Night Football and on Monday Night Football.
Sure.
Like, you know, most of your would-be studs, and I think that's one of the big takeaways this past week, was just showing, you know, matchup advantage can really beat you down if you think about it, right? Because we talk about that Baltimore and Cincinnati game. I expected points to be there. And Freeman found the end zone, but still 39 total yards, yawn. Aaron Jones, we'll talk about him again some more. He was 32nd amongst running backs. So, you know, guys that you're – Darrell Henderson, 31st in a game that went off script, right? For the Rams, like, he was a top five play, I think, everywhere in the world, thinking, they're running downhill. And that maybe the Lions can get some saver points late. Instead, they needed everything and that huge interception. I still think birthday boy Jalen Ramsey got there a little early, but that's just me.
All right, that's our look back at week 7. And as we do our transition, and this is kind of our mesh point where we still look back at stuff from week 7 and we look ahead to week 8 and try to get you set up for success, I want to bring in our executive producer, Ryan Bershinger. And Bersh, you can hear him on various Fox Sports radio shows, directing them, including our Fox Sports Red Zone radio show that I do with George Reister every Sunday at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. Ryan's our executive producer there. He does our fantasy hits and misses. Ryan is going to tell us a bit of a story on Mike, life in the world of streaming defenses. Bersh, let's hear the tale of streaming defenses in week 7.
That's right. So I like to stream defenses, and typically when I play defenses, I more tend to play them as opposing offenses, right? I just look at their opponents and I tackle that. So I saw a defense laying there, it was not my first choice. I was snubbed on the waiver wire. I tried to pick up actually their opponent in this game. But I saw a team that was playing a rookie quarterback with not a very powerful offense. And I figured, you know what? This should pass. I can get something out of this. So, yes, in 2 leagues, I started the New York Jets defense.
Wow. Well, but against the pass D, like, they've been run on all year.
Yes.
But the pass D is giving you something. Hey, they could confuse. Hey, Robert Saleh. What are we doing?
Exactly.
Wait, okay, wait. No, Ryan. How many points did the Jets defense give you in your leagues?
Negative 11.
Wow.
32nd out of 32 teams, and yes, of course, 6 teams did not play in the past week.
Went to the settings of one of my leagues to see if we gave, like, minus 10 points for over 50, and our range only went up to 46. And I'm thinking now we have to change that. We have to change it. It should be like 46 to 50 is minus 5. And then to your point, minus 10 or minus 11. I could not imagine no offense, Ryan, it could be the worst play in fantasy football that I have heard in a long, long time.
No. That's okay. I saw a tweet that was worse. I don't want to throw our buddy Robert Guerra under the bus, but he tweeted it out.
Yes.
That in September, he dropped Jamar Chase for a running back or something.
Justin Jackson.
Justin Jackson of the Chargers. Yes.
But
go Cats. I mean, I love the Northwestern guy and all, but geez.
We all make roster decisions that I don't even know what it would look like in my live scoring. Like, I can't even picture on how a negative 11. I've seen negative 2, like a quarterback gets picked off, you know, maybe the first play of the game. Doesn't have it. Negative 2, I can't imagine. A minus 11 in that. Oh, that is great.
I do have some good news, though. In one of those leagues, I still won. In fact, I still won by a large amount.
Bersh,
20,
nobody
20
cares.
Plus.
Nobody cares.
The other one, it wouldn't have mattered. I could have played the best defense in that league, and I still would have lost in that game.
You could have played the 85 Bears.
Exactly.
That's what it could have been.
Thankfully, it did not matter.
Like, that setting and... I know for kickers, like, some leagues have just decided to eliminate them, right? Most of the guillotine leagues that you're in, yours doesn't have a kicker, does it, Dan?
No.
Yeah, we don't have a kicker in that. I think Charchian is categorically against kickers. He's a Vikings fan, so what does that tell you? Yeah, Charch, I called
Fair
you
enough.
Out. But I remember, like, when we were setting up the base game when I was helping build the Yahoo behemoth all those years ago, we thought it should be putative if your guy was missing chip shot field goals. So, you know, minus 3, minus 5. Mm-hmm. Really get after it. And folks would always complain. It's like, well, how did I get negative points for my kicker? It's like, he sucked.
Sure.
He went one, like Myers tonight, he went 1-for-3.
Yeah.
Should be a negative score. Well, right, there should be no positivity out of that.
There's something to it, and then there's something to weighing on how much of an impact a kicker should have, or a team defense.
Third of the game,
well.
Dan Beyer. Third of the game.
It's a third of the game when we watch it on TV, but in fantasy, we all know it's not. And I don't even think it's a ninth of the game. That's the weighing of it. That is what actually makes the negative 11 just even that much better. I think the lesson that we have learned is you can still stream defenses as long as they're not named the Jets. That is the lesson that we learned from our executive producer, Ryan Bershinger.
That is well done right there.
I will take that forward for the rest of time. Thank you, guys.
I've also realized, too, I only like to hear fantasy stories of other teams that lose. Like, I never want to hear anybody's great and how anybody saved. It's always better when the team loses. So when they say nobody cares about your fantasy team, I disagree. I only want to hear if your team loses and how you got an awful beat, because misery loves company, and that's what I need when I play Miles Sanders every week.
Yeah, schadenfreude is a very powerful thing.
Oh,
like,
in fantasy,
we hate watch
it's the best.
Sports, and for fantasy, absolutely. How did your dreams and hopes of this matchup get crushed? Like, we want to – I want a matchup. Smith and I are co-owning a couple of teams. We've gotten into these Fabiano and other friends, you know, industry leagues. And we eked out a two-point win. It's like, those are the worst, right, being on the other side of. Because then you're looking at your bench going, oh, one roster. It's like, I always want to get blown out. Like, if I'm going to lose, let it go to hell. Let it not be, you know, one toggle of up-down – of a wide receiver or tight end that does me in. Lose by 40. Then it's not on me.
Yes.
I was destined to lose.
There's a lot of truth in that as well. Just make me feel better, guy that I benched. Or team that I'm playing, just run away with it.
Well, but it's also in our fandom, right? I mean, you watched your Seahawks lose this, whatever this Monday night game was, to a team that wasn't very good. Right? My Bears got blown out by the Bucks. You know what it does? It really magnifies how crappy your team construction really is.
Sure.
And I'd rather have that than be like, I don't know, can we tread water until this guy gets back? Or tomorrow, hot take, and I'll tell you so right now, Dan, it's going to be all about how valuable is Russell Wilson.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And why did he not get those MVP votes? Because you see right now, they're a rudderless ship. I'm also writing copy for other shows.
Jason Myers makes some field goals that actually may be a different story. Not that they were makeable, but I'm just saying it. If Russell Wilson plays, I think in the last 2 weeks the Seahawks win. He didn't. They had opportunities, and unfortunately they could not get them done. It's the most diplomatic way that I can put it. And trust me, we're not going to focus on the Seahawks anymore because for fantasy purposes, they're basically dead to us for the next 2 weeks. Yeah. The Chiefs were dead on Sunday.
Yeah,
that's my takeaway in moving forward. Really, in looking back and just doing a quick synopsis of Kansas City, and as we look at it from fantasy, it seems when Tyreek Hill goes, the Chiefs go, and when he doesn't, they don't this season. However, this past weekend was truly their first real stinker of the season, and it was bad. Like, I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything. It was bad. But you also have the Giants now coming into town on Monday Night Football in Week 8. And there's no reason why I would hesitate to bench any of the normal Chiefs, even Darrell Williams in this situation. I think that's – there are problems in Kansas City, yes, but still not enough in a fantasy world where I would panic and alter any of my playing when it comes to them.
No, they're still in. There's no question about it. I mean, you look at the opponent Giants, what, seventh most fantasy points per game allowed to running back. So, yeah, Williams is in. Mm-hmm. Went off script. He only saw the ball out of the backfield five times as a rusher for 20 yards. Again, that was expected to be your big point total of the week, right? 57.5 was the over-under, and it came in woefully under, and then Mahomes gets hurt, and that's the end of any attempt. Chad Henne came out 11 of 16 for 82 yards, just because we needed a Chad Henne update.
Sure.
But, I mean, you look at all the receivers that are out there, and they don't have a consistent running game. I think Williams is fine. I think Mahomes has been careless with the football, and that's not a hot take or anything that folks are, you know, just coming to. It's just you watch football. You yell at the guy who has no stats, and right now Patrick Mahomes is, you know, trying to make plays that aren't there. Why? Because his defense stinks.
Yeah.
Right? So it all works together into one big mess. But the points are still going to be there. They're still going to put up most weeks. This just happened to be the outlier, and now we have to, you know, from a football perspective, try to figure out what the hell the Titans are. Since I equated it on the air, Dan, to, you know, a college class or maybe a middle school class. All right, we're going to take out the high and the low of your grades. So you lost to Arizona, that's the high. You lost to the Jets, that's the low. Now let's figure out what you are.
Sure. And that Jets game, and I know people don't think it's an excuse, but you didn't have A.J. Brown or Julio Jones.
Julio, sure.
You know, so it was an overtime game.
Still the Jets, though.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. The other thing about the two things quickly about the Chiefs, and then I'll let you do your takeaway, is one of the things that we were worried about them was their depth at wide receiver, because there was no more Sammy Watkins. Can Mecole Hardman move into that spot? What about DeMarcus Robinson? And it doesn't seem that anybody is stepping into that spot. Byron Pringle, you know, had 5 catches for 73 yards. Maybe Patrick Mahomes trusts him a little bit more, but I think that that is a problem with Kansas City. And then you just mentioned Chad Henne. Those 16 pass attempts came on one drive. Like, Mahomes was knocked out in the middle of the fourth quarter. So the Chiefs got the ball back. They had a 17-play drive where Henne threw it 16 of the 17 times. I don't know why I love the stat. I just thought it was absurd, because you're like, oh, you know, Henne must have gotten a lot of playing time. No, he played one drive and just chucked it on basically every snap. My takeaway from Week 7.
The return of Chad Henne, as it were. Look, surprised that Baltimore got run over as they did, but Joe Burrow is the real deal. You look at him spreading the ball around, and you just marvel at what Ja'Marr Chase, we mentioned him before, but just absolutely absurd, the level of productivity. Tua Tagovailoa, to me, is a guy that whoever gets him, once the Dolphins give up, they're going to have some fun, because I think if he can stay healthy, always a big if, the kid can play. But in the interim, there's going to be opportunities in your fantasy lineups, I think, to play him before anything breaks down that way. The Giants, Daniel Jones, we get him up as a waiver wire. We'll get to that in just a second. But making the most of the plays. Arizona, again, it still goes to the – they spread the ball out too damn much, and they'll drive you insane.
Yeah.
And, you know, all my preseason – reservations on Carson Wentz, while he didn't have a huge yardage total, guy looks in command of an offense. So for fantasy purposes, I think I'm feeling pretty good, especially that Pittman's going to go out and win some one-on-ones for me. So all the better there.
Yeah, the thing that I think about the Colts, and I brought this up on our show yesterday, just did a little preview of the Niners game. I was surprised, Mike, at how many people liked the Niners in that game. Not that the Colts had give you tons to like, but I think they'd kind of started to turn it around a little bit. And the other thing was, there wasn't a team in the preseason that went through as much turmoil with injuries and COVID than the Indianapolis Colts. And so I think that allowed them to not, maybe not get off to the start that they wanted. They lost to Seattle, and they lost to the Rams in the first 2 weeks, and you're kind of now all of a sudden starting behind the eight ball. I think things get a little bit better for Indianapolis, you know, as we go down that road. And just something to watch, and then the AFC playoff picture is wide open. But I think that helped with the Colts. Now they kind of put those early season losses behind them after a rough preseason, and now are finding their stride a bit.
Well, getting Quentin Nelson back will help solve a lot of issues.
Yes. Right,
a lot of mean up front, and for Jonathan Taylor means big days ahead. So, yeah, all in all, you know, with all the bye weeks and the injuries and, you know, fantasy strange bedfellows, and you look at some of the leaders at each position for scoring purposes, you know, when we start getting down into the back end of WR1 and, you know, it's Khalif Raymond of the Detroit Lions with his 6 catches for 115 yards. And just keep going on down the line. Kendrick Bourne throwing a touchdown and then another 4 catches for 68 yards. Dante Pettis against Carolina. Guys that maybe you started. I won a game in one of those weird industry leagues with Dante Pettis in my starting lineup, which means the clock, broken clock, can be right twice, right? Because, I mean, there's just some madness that goes through, and these are the weeks that you hope to, you know, as Calipari so eloquently put, succeed and proceed, because a lot of strangeness in those games.
There is a lot of strangeness on Monday when it came to COVID in the NFL. First, there was the news that Matt Nagy tested positive, head coach of the Bears. Then we heard Joe Barry, the Packers defensive coordinator, was on the tested positive. And then we found out that Packers wide receiver Davante Adams was placed on the reserve COVID list. And now there's Adam Schefter reported that Adams did test positive. We believe he was vaccinated, made a social media post, and then reports out of Wisconsin saying he did receive the vaccine. So he would need two negative tests 24 hours apart to be able to play. The problem is they've got the Cardinals on Thursday. And so, Mike, we kind of blend in what we usually wrap up with on our early week podcast as a preview of Thursday. But now the Thursday game and what's happening with Devontae Adams has really become the big story heading into week 8 in the NFL.
Well, it's pretty amazing. We've talked about it. You've got the, you know, for lack of a better term, the Holy Triumvirate in Green Bay. Aaron, and Devontae, and now you got to go find someone else, right? The next leading receivers are Tonyan and Lazard. They each have 15 receptions on the year, Dan. So you're reaching a bit.
Aaron, and Allen actually sounds a lot better than Aaron, and Devontae if you're just going for symmetry. So maybe Lazard would be the guy to go for week 8.
I think so. You're looking at currently owned in about 5% of leagues. No doubt a ton of waiver claims have already been made as you and I record this. So now it becomes the question for that Packers offense. You know, if you need help at tight end, you know, Tonyan's a guy that's probably going to see a couple more touches as well. I would suspect, you know, the Aaron Jones / A.J. Dillon combination will see a bunch as well. But, you know, otherwise we got to find some help at wide receiver if you're missing Devontae Adams. So that's what we're looking at. Bateman, you know, 3 catches, 80 yards in that beatdown by the Bengals, but his role looks to be increasing. He's owned only in about a third of leagues right now. Gallup coming back off injury in the bye week. He's owned in fewer than half. Remember, he only played in week 1, 4 catches on 7 targets, 36 yards. How much of a work share he gets right out of the gate is certainly a question, but you hang a star on it. Russell Gage, well, if they're not going to throw to Calvin Ridley, how about we get Russell Gage involved, right? Missed three games. You had the bye week, 4 catches, 6 yards, 67 yards, and a touchdown. Opportunity, Darius Slayton. Everybody's hurt for the Giants, and like we said before, along with Daniel Jones, they've got Kansas City on tap. 5 catches on 9 targets for 63 yards in this return to the field in that win over Carolina.
You know, the Calvin Ridley situation with Atlanta is crazy because you would think there would be this great rapport. Ridley's still getting targets. They're just not connecting, he and Matt Ryan. So that's something to watch, especially as the Falcons have a divisional opponent with the Panthers coming up in week 8. Crazy to think, though, that the Falcons are 3-3 sitting there at 500. And in the thick of things for the playoffs in the NFC, I was going to throw out another name for waiver wire, Mike, and if there are any more, you can add on to that because we kind of did a little Packers-Cardinals combo. And we'll wrap up with Packers-Cardinals preview in just a second. But with Miles Sanders and his ankle injury, I mean, maybe you want to take a shot with Kenneth Gainwell of Philadelphia against the Lions, which, by the way, the Lions will get their first win of the year in week 8. I will mark that down. I thought it was against the Ravens, and we were oh so close, Mike. We were oh so close, but that 66-yarder. But it is going to happen. The Lions are going to win that game. But the Eagles are going to need to look for something in the backfield. I don't know if Miles Sanders is going to be able to miraculously recover from his ankle injury. I would doubt that. And not that I'm saying it's healthy to play Eagles running backs, but if you are in desperate need, maybe Gainwell could be a guy you could look at.
Boston Scott coming in and screwing you over as well.
Yes,
You know, he's the specter of him being part of it. But yeah, Gainwell's one of those guys. Look, even if you're not going to start him, if you're a Sanders owner, take a look at your bench, and it becomes the what if scenario. Mm-hmm. Right, I'll take it from the Marvel Universe. I'll create my own series of comics based on what-if scenarios for fantasy football. How about Trevor Lawrence going up against Seattle, coming out of the bye, another wide receiver who I wring my hands because every time I recommend him, he disappears. But when we look at Laviska Shenault, you got 7 or more targets in 4 of his 6 games. So he does pop up at least as getting some attention, whether they can complete. But coming out of the bye week, really curious to see what we have going forward. And then I throw this out here before we get to our Thursday preview, Dan. In the next couple of days, we're going to find out what happens in theory with Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The potential for a trade. Because if he does get out of Houston, like one of the big things here, he's not playing, right? They haven't forced the issue in terms of the league making any kind of decision. Why? Because he didn't want to play for Houston. So it's been convenient that, you know, there's a battle, you know, just not wanting to play for the club versus the pending legal battles that are still out there and the, you know, the civil cases that are to be resolved. But if he does get traded, you may have a situation whereby at some point down the stretch he becomes eligible, right? Whatever suspension maybe gets put out by the league office, personal conduct policy, that maybe there's a spot for him down the stretch. Does it mean he comes in as the same guy that you saw winging it around last year? No, but again, it goes back to my defensive strategies, particularly for the fantasy playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not going to use him and never have an intention of playing him, whether you come to the decision, you know, in terms of how you feel about rostering a guy with all these complaints again levied against him, but he would not come back to beat you in a playoff matchup, which
sure.
The scenario does present potentially exist given the climate of a potential trade this coming week.
And listen, I'm not giving any passes on anything that's out there, but we're just talking about fantasy football.
No, that's it.
The NFL's going to let him play. You know, why not put him on your roster? If he does, you know, if something happens, then you just cut him, let him go. But, yeah, to your point, and wherever he does go, if he does go before the trade deadline, the value of the other players around him in whatever market, whether it be Miami or Carolina, would also be something to look at. And so if you just want to, you know, I don't know, play with things or whatever and figure it out, if Miami is the destination, maybe you look at a couple of the Miami wide receivers
sure.
out there, maybe getting a boost and moving on. That could be another option. But yeah, to your point, I think that is actually very, very smart. All right, let's wrap up this episode with what could be the game of the year. I mean, Packers-Cardinals. And by the way, that stadium has the most wackiest crap happen in it. I mean, you think of all the things that have happened in Glendale, Arizona. And I'm talking about Russell Wilson interception at the 1 yard line. We're talking Patriots perfect season coming to an end. Helmet catch with David Tyree. We're even talking Fiesta Bowls with Boise State taking out Oklahoma. Like the craziest things happen in that stadium. And for some reason, I think we're going to get another crazy situation because it's Thursday night. It's on Fox. It's going to be a big game. Even if Devontae Adams doesn't play, I think something crazy is going to happen between the Packers and Cardinals.
I think you're right. And having been in that stadium a couple of times for training camp, workouts, or whatever, it's just got a different feel to it. Right? I haven't been able to attend a game. Unfortunately, the schedules haven't worked out. But it's also Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers playing great football. So now it becomes, all right, which of the tertiary options, especially if you're looking at a daily fantasy, I think is where you would probably gamble perhaps a bit more. Again, not heavy on bye weeks, but maybe your team's banged up in your standard leagues. But we talked about it before. I mean, you got Lazard and you got Tonyan. Maybe there's a little bit more going here for Randall Cobb. Maybe, but I think that'd be a desperation play. I think we're going to find better options for you there. On the Arizona side of things, you know, Edmonds, you know, the Packers give up, it's already through 7 weeks, they've given up 40 receptions to opposing backs. And so that's where he makes his hay. Already he's got 27 receptions on the year. So I'm expecting him to be active out of the backfield. So one of those where we'll get him in as a higher-end number two, looking for some balance there. Hopkins, like you said, touchdown dependent. And what's interesting, they've already got four players with over 300 yards to kind of punctuate the fact that Kyler Murray is spreading the ball around a bunch. So looking for massive games from one single player, I don't know that you're going to get it. Obviously, Green Bay without Alexander and some of the other components there in the back seven, opportunity should knock once again for Kyler Murray. But two top five plays at QB, even with my guy Devontae Adams not being available, still expecting Rodgers to find some magic. Chandler Jones will be back for the Cardinals. So there's the little wrinkle on the defensive side to make his life a little more difficult, which means he's screaming hot route a bunch more, which means Jones, Dillon, and the tight ends probably see a little more work.
Green Bay, as you said, having a difficult time covering backs out of the backfield. They have not allowed a 100-yard rusher yet this year. Khalil Herbert came close, 97. And Taylor Heinicke actually came close this past weekend.
Yes,
it was 95.
Did.
But no one's hit triple digits. But as you said, guys out of the backfield are dangerous. All right, there it is, your Week 7 recap and your first look ahead to Week 8. Be apprised of everything that happens with the Green Bay Packers and their COVID situation, because you're going to want to set it up for your game on Thursday night. And we will be back with a new episode on Friday morning to get you ready for Week 8. Again, if you have any questions, find Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. A big thank you to our executive producer, Ryan Bershinger, and his great play of Jets defense that gave him negative 11. You can always tweet him at Ryan Bershinger. Best of luck on Thursday night, and we'll get you set for Week 8 before we talk again.